Okay, welcome to the Knights Party Roundtable discussion, and it is March 12th, and I'm Thomas Robb,
and Jason Robb here,
and I'm Brendan Warner,
and we have a couple other guests here, don't we? Special guest? Who are the special guests? Give me your names over there. Special guest, Caleb. All right, do you have a last name? Rob, all right. And the other special guest, what is it? Peyton Rob. All right.
And those are my two oldest sons.
Okay, great.
And
they're going to hear for a few minutes, and then they're going to go with Grandma up for a hike. They're going to go hike up through the woods. Grandma likes to take them on hikes.
That's right.
They like to go on hikes. And they look for, fairies living underneath bushes.
Fairies. Yeah, I'm talking about the type of fairies that lives in San Francisco.
No, not those kind of fairies. But these are fairies that Grandma said lives under mushroom toadstools.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I was hoping so. Hoping they were like a fairy camp with a rainbow flag.
No, not those fairies. But so we're ready to go here, and it's pretty
up. Since we are talking about the Knights Party Roundtable, we have several people yesterday that has been working at the Christian Revival Center, you know, and these are, of course, at the center, you know, we have the Office of the Knights Party, and then we have the Christian Revival Center, the church, and activities are always going there at what's called the center. And so, we have a couple of people working on the entrance of the camp and the archway. If you haven't been there before, we have a brand new archway there. It looks really nice. It's rustic. It says Christian Revival Center. And so we have one associate over there yesterday, and he was working on the pillars, I guess, the archway, and putting polyurethane on it. And so activities are always going here at the center.
Brandon's been working there in the foyer.
Brandon, and then, of course, Brandon here.
And his wife. Come for the Lord.
Exactly. And Brandon and Lori, they've been at the church itself, in the entrance and inside the foyer. We have some nice wood staining that they've been doing and sprucing that up. It looks really nice. And so those are little things that it just takes time, and there's a lot of detail to it, you know, but it always looks good and really...
Especially the media comes here and helps present ourselves as a upstanding professional organization that cares for its image and cares for its message.
Right. Well, it's all about our enhancement of our image, like you said.
Right.
It's very, very accurate. And, of course, every time we do have the media that comes here, and it's almost every week or two, we always have media come up here doing interviews and stuff, and they're just really impressed with the campground and all the activities going on here, because really there's no other place in the United States that has what we're having here, the growth and then just the foundation that we're laying out for the future.
Right. Absolutely. And you have anything special to say, Caleb? Nothing at all? Nothing profound? Tayton? No? Nothing profound?
Nothing at all?
They like it when camp comes, when they have conferences, because lots of kids come.
Yeah.
And then they get to play.
What do you like about Faith and Freedom Conference? Caleb is coming up in April 28th, 29th, and 30th. And what are some things you like about the conference?
I think something I like about the conference is when we have the music's like my grandpa and dad and Rachel goes up at front and they speak.
You like that? You like when you have the different speakers and the music? You like the music?
And Steve and Bonnie, we like their music.
Steve and Bonnie and from Tulsa. And then we have
Charity and Shelby.
Charity and Shelby with Heritage Connection. You like their music? So that's one of the things. And now, remember, Caleb, I'll tell you, like I tell my clients in court, okay, no one can hear you by shaking your head, okay? Okay, you have to say words. Okay, and so same thing. The listeners here, they have to hear you because they can't see you shaking your head. We can, but they can't. So
yes,
yeah.
And the other part I like is playing outside.
Playing outside. Get your energy out. And other kids coming there. And one thing I think is really nice is when families come to these conferences is that the parents don't have to worry about their kids playing out in the middle of the street. They don't have to worry about protesters. They don't have to worry about anything because it's a nice family retreat. It's out in the Ozark Mountains, a nice camping area, campground, nice facilities. There's playground equipment for the children and the older teenagers. I mean, there's just a lot of activities for families. And so when parents come here with their children, it's like they can just relax, you know. And it's so nice because, you know, we strive to make sure that families are attracted to this event because that's what this whole thing is about. It's about the family. And when parents can come here and relax, knowing that their children are safe, and that they're having a good time, and it just makes the whole...
And children are learning, too.
And their children are learning, because yeah. they're being around other children that have the same love and desire of them.
And they see them. I see other parents, not just... Because it's hard in this world, the way I view it anyway, that when a mom and dad try to teach their children, but the only people they see expressing those beliefs is mom and dad.
Right.
And, you know, no matter how well mom and dad may be doing, having other people to reinforce that. Other people, because they love mom and dad, but they might see somebody else that they really respect. Not that they don't respect mom and dad, but somebody that you just have respect for, that you don't have a family connection, just have respect for, really enhances their commitment then, because they see somebody who doesn't have any family or personal commitment, but still something they can see and respect, and that really enforces them what they're being taught at home.
Okay.
Well,
I'll leave for a second.
I'll be back.
So we are going to continue, and Pastor Rob is going to step out for a second, and he'll be right back. But yeah, it's really nice these conferences, because Brendan, you know as well as I do that there are other racial organizations around the United States, and they have, you know, they'll have their conferences, and unfortunately they have had their conferences in hotel conference rooms, you know, and usually they're in your major cities, and so unfortunately they a lot of times they're being canceled, you know, and
they also have to find the grounds to have their after gatherings, the after parties, you know, anywhere from other clans members to the neo-Nazis even, you know,
right.
When they want to do a swastika lighting or something, yeah, they have to do it on a property that they're allowed to do it on,
right.
You know, and not everybody lives out in the country and they have that available, and maybe where somebody lives, a lot of people are going to travel and not knowing where it is, as we've been here for so many years,
right.
People just know where to come now.
Absolutely.
You know. But when you said just about growing, I just, you know, was speaking with like-minded pro-white Christians. I've come to find out just how big we are growing, not every year, or every month, or every week, but it's every day now. And the numbers are getting bigger, and I'm so surprised, you know. It's awesome. It's good. It's good to see the old faces every year, you know. And then it's also good to see the new faces every year because, you know, those people that aren't doing their tour of duty for 6 months and then leave, you know, but those who've been coming for many years, it's, you know, you make lifelong friends. And every year, you know, whether it's Faith and Freedom or Congress or both that these people come to,
yeah.
It's always great to see old friends and,
oh, absolutely.
You know,
well, you know, years ago, you know, because a lot of times people will talk about, you know, the different conferences and people that have never been here before, they're just really impressed because, you know, people come up here and it's like, I didn't know that this was here,
right.
Or did not know how relaxing it was going to be, or I should have brought my children, or I should have brought my spouse.
And I went to that one gentleman from Alabama that
absolutely
came, and he felt so bad. He said if Alabama wasn't so far away, he'd go to pick them up.
Exactly.
Because he got there, he saw the playground, he said, well, I've got a really young one, you know, is nursing with mom. I said, well, here's the nursery, you know, we've got to go inside right now.
Exactly.
You know, inside, and there are little cribs in there for rest time.
Right.
Beautiful, you know.
And then the next time he did come, he did bring his family.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And he will be back this year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and no, the Christian Revival Center and the church grounds, this is something that has been worked on for over 30 years. We knew that there was going to be a time, because we could see it, you know, even 30 years ago, this hatred that was starting to being boiled up and started rising to the forefront of the hatred against white people. And we knew the day was going to be coming where that hatred was going to pour over to racialist groups be able to peacefully assemble, you know. And so we knew that we had to have a place, a site, just physical property that could hold meetings and conferences and have a foundation for not only the Knights Party, but also the family retreat. Yes. And so, you know, over 30 years ago, we intentionally wanted to get property out in the country. We wanted to get property where it was in a rural area that we didn't have to worry about protesters. We didn't have to worry about being canceled. And so we intentionally located a area centrally located in the United States where anyone really could travel within a day or two actually to the center of of America. And so we intentionally spotted this area in the Ozark Mountains in order to have a piece of property to start building this foundation. And it's been over a 30-year process.
What I want to say is what I mentioned on a show I was on, where people were calling it a compound. But I want to let everybody know this is by no means a compound. There are no walls keeping people out. There are no walls keeping people in.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary with a guy called United Shades of America.
Right.
And they went to these quote-unquote compounds. And look, folks, you know, there's no one, no crazy man with a ski mask and machine gun up the gates. just driving up in front parking, you know. Please park towards the bottom.
Right.
Because ones at the top are the ones working in the kitchen. But there's nothing like that. I mean, look, we've got our security cameras, and that's for protection. But
they got children.
It's not a compound. This is a family retreat.
Right.
You know.
So the boys, are they ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, say goodbye, boys.
Bye.
All right. Tell grandma you're ready to go on your hike.
Well, you know,
about 30 minutes long, right, Jason?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll leave it somewhere.
But yeah,
okay.
No, it's definitely true. You know, and recently, you know, Brennan, it's really sad because of the fact that as white Christian organizations, and there are a lot out there, they just really, it's hard for them to go and have a conference. Right. You know, the Council of Conservative Citizens is one group, you know, a great group, a lot of respect for them. But even more, it's hard for them to actually hold a conference. Because
off of their own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because what we're talking about before is that, you know, they'll have a meeting and they'll have it all set up. And then the anti-white activists, they will find out where they're having their meeting and they'll call that motel. And then they'll start threatening the motel that if you allow them to do that, we're going to cause problems, you know, or they'll threaten them that we're going to put bombs there. I mean, they'll actually threaten them. And so the motel then will just violate the contract and just cancel the meetings.
Right.
And it allows them not to be able to hold a meeting.
Right. And I want to say that if anybody is going to a meeting by one of these groups, they don't have to worry about it. I've never heard any of these groups actually bombing the motel.
No.
So what I'm getting at is, if anybody is going to go to a concert and go to one of the meetings and they hear this with the rumor, don't be afraid of
it. Don't be afraid of it.
Go to the concert meeting, whatever concert it is, ours or others, Go ahead, Bill. It's safe.
It's hype.
But they threaten the hotel management.
Exactly.
The guests that come there are fine. You're not going to have problems.
No.
So go and enjoy the conference.
But unfortunately, you know, they have to cancel the conference, you know, and then cause, you know, problems. And that's the whole thing. It's caused problems. But we knew that's why we had to do this over 30 years ago, because we knew there was going to be a time that was going to make it virtually impossible for racialist groups to hold meetings, conferences, and we don't have to worry about that,
yeah.
You know. And so it's really a blessing. But at Faith and Freedom Conference, since we've been kind of talking a little bit about that and the church grounds and the property here, we have some great speakers lined up for the Faith and Freedom Conference. We have Paul Perrone. We're hoping that we'll be able to be here. Canadian Association for Free Expression from Canada, obviously. Probably one of the premier white activists in Canada who travels, you know, within the United States and in Europe as well. We have Pete Popper Hercules,
yeah.
From
America. Popper Hercules.
Popper Hercules. So,
he's really got that.
Yeah, and he's with American Free Press. And then, of course, we have, you know, Brian Warner here. And we have, and of course, Pastor Rob and Rachel Pendergraf.
But we have another fellow that possibly could. I don't want to say too much
about
him. Yeah, if I say too much, the people figure out who he is.
Sure.
But if he leaves that confirmation, it'll be a good thing for him to be here.
And so we have some really great speakers lined up. And, you know, last year, you know, we had Willis Cardo, you know, or 2 years ago, I believe it was, of American Free Press. And he, no, since then he's passed away. And so it's so important to come into these conferences, to mingle with those that are the doers and shakers within the racialist movement, and being around like-minded people that have the same love and desire of, you know, keeping our country like it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I've been better be making plans. April 28, 29, and 30. I've got a story here, Rachel or Jason, that I thought was kind of interesting. It's funny. Is that some college students are suggesting that they hand a bill to white kids who say something that's inappropriate, and then they lecture them. I mean, you say something that offends me,
right.
That's inappropriate, it offends me. So I'm going to spend about 5 minutes lecturing to you, explain to you why it offended me.
Yeah.
Now, after I'm done, now I'm going to give you a bill for the time I had to spend. Informing you of your misdeeds.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Scripps College. It says here, students of color to charge white peers for emotional labor inflicted upon them, referring to effort exerted when a student of color corrects or educates a white student in some manner.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
It's crazy, but the point is, they throw that crazy stuff out and it gets traction after a while.
Right.
You know, it gets traction. Just in reparations. They've been talking about that for years, but every year it gets a little more traction.
Exactly.
A little more traction. And they're beginning into the serious dialogue. Reparation for slavery that your ancestors, even though you didn't have any ancestors living here, you are benefiting from the white power structure, and therefore you had to give reparations to some black person who maybe didn't have any ancestors living here either. But nevertheless, you know,
yeah.
It gets traction after a while. Yeah, they want to give, other advice that Flower offers students of color, call in professor white peers to help educate their peers. Yeah, anyway, you can start giving a bill to them to educate them. I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, wow. I guess it'll be in the mail when I send them a check.
Well, they'll send you a bill. And if you're not paid within 30 days, then you'll probably get a tag. You get a citation. Late fine, late fee attached to it.
Well, that's, yeah.
That's what I mean. Now, after 90 days, then they might take it, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe give them some money and some Huawei money. What type of currency do you want?
Yeah. I saw this. Did you hear more about that? The Trump Towers being wiretapped?
I did not until this morning, yesterday, Saturday was really the first time I really heard about it. And so I've not really heard anything
about
it.
Yeah, you've been busy.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I guess I need to sit and listen to the news a little bit, but, you know.
But it doesn't surprise me. I mean, it doesn't surprise me they would be wiretapping that, and they probably got, who knows? I mean, they've probably been wiretapping the White House probably as we speak, and they probably didn't know about
Obama probably wiped out all through.
Exactly, you know. So that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, when you had during the election, when you have Loretta Lynch meeting with Bill Clinton during this investigations for over an hour, you know, when FBI was investigating Hillary Clinton, that doesn't surprise me. Who knows what they would have been talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, now the report is that his senior, I think, political advisor, Obama's senior invisible advisor has moved in. Actually, I think it's been confirmed, has moved in to the house of Michelle and Barack Obama in Washington, D.C. And the rumor is that they're going to set up... Well, no. They're setting up camp. Who knows about that? But they're setting up camp in order to start doing political activists and getting ready here in 3 years, 2 or 3 years, to start running somebody against Trump. And that's going to be kind of like their headquarters.
Yeah, I can see the person they're running with Michelle.
Yeah. Could be Michelle. Some people are saying Oprah.
Oprah?
Yeah. That has actually been because they were saying Oprah, obviously the multi-billionaire, has a lot of clout within the left-wing movement.
Yeah.
And she has, of course, TV stations like that. So she has a lot of influence within her group of people. You know, so with us, we'd be like, oh my gosh. But to them, they'd be all for it. Because they're looking at it as she's the other side of Trump. Well, Trump did it. He was an entertainer. He was the one. He's a multi-billionaire. So why can't we have like Oprah? He's the same thing. Has a lot of billions of money and is not considered so far left, because there are a lot of average so-called quote Americans, you know, that like Oprah.
Yeah, and they outside of the beltway. Right.
And so there's been a lot of rumors that she may be running for president.
Yeah.
Well,
demographics have been a major, tipping point on what happens.
Right.
The racial demographics. So I don't know. It's not looking good, but who knows? Things may change for the next 4 years.
Well,
I understand some gal got the other day was, and I haven't seen a video on it, but you saw it. You put up on your Facebook.
Yeah,
has the sheriff been deported? Or
I don't know, and I guess I can.
You may not have heard this, brother.
See if I can pull this up. But yeah, it was a lady who was here on a visa.
Illegally.
It's a black lady. Or a Mexican, I think. And she was here illegally, and she kind of was becoming a spokesman for the illegal aliens and the immigration. And I guess she did not renew her visa. And so she had a visa waiver where you don't have to have a deportation hearing under the program of visa she had. So I guess it was regarding a press conference she was having, so she was speaking. Well, ICE came and picked her up
in the visa
at the conference.
So she was kind of snotty about it. Thought she, she's untouchable because, under Obama she was untouchable.
Right.
And so I guess she's at a press conference encouraging all the illegal aliens to defy the law, pick up right in the middle of the press conference.
Yeah. So this was was March 2nd, 2017, by Kim Smith, it says an illegal alien detained after admitting her status during news conference. And it says an illegal immigrant found out the hard way that she's no longer in former President Barack Obama's America when she was detained after speaking out about her immigration status Wednesday in a Jackson, Mississippi news conference. ICE agents nabbed Danielle Vargas, 22, just after she spoke and took her into custody, the Jackson Clarion Ledger reported. Vargas was previously protected under President Obama's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, as her family had entered the U.S. when she was 7.
Her DACA status had expired in November 2016, and she did not renew it. Margot's brother and father were detained outside their home by ICE agents in February, while Vargas hidden in a closet. After that, Vargas told the Clarion Ledger she had planned to go into hiding, but she came out of hiding to speak at an awareness-raising news conference arranged by local immigration attorneys. She drove away from the conference with a friend. Agents reportedly pulled the vehicle over and told Vargas, "You know who we are. You know what we're here for." And her immigration attorney basically said there's nothing he could do because she had signed a waiver.
Well, so, as good as that is, but even better if she went up there like she spit and then walked up her pretty rough stage.
Yeah.
That would be even better.
But anyway, the listeners here can't see it, but I'm showing a picture to Pastor Rob and Brennan.
Is this her here?
That's her.
It looks like a guy.
Well, she's probably a lesbian.
Does that look like a guy to you?
She's probably a lesbian. I mean, she's...
In the blue shirt front?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's probably a lesbian, but she's, 22 years old, and,
Maybe she's transitioning.
She could, you know. And so, anyway...
And, you know, transition. Nobody transitions.
No.
You don't really become a guy.
Yeah.
You don't really become a girl. You're not really transitioning. You're going to maybe... some of them don't really even have an operation, But I like it's a little crude, I know, so I have to say it. But Ann Coulter said it on TV, so I guess I can say it here.
Right.
She said that your gender is determined by what's in your pants and not in your head.
Exactly. That is true.
Yeah, she said it on TV, so I guess I can say it.
Exactly.
Your gender is what's in your pants, not in your head.
Right.
Yeah, so I saw on the internet related to that where. There was a guy and said, it doesn't matter what you think your gender may be for the day, it all comes down to reality when that rubber bullet hits you between the legs and you feel it. And then this guy there with his makeup, because he was crying and holding himself down there, so the rubber bullet hit him. So, he was a man, he was a guy.
He's a guy, yeah.
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 So, anyway, we transitioned from the illegal alien being picked up to transitioners. anyway.
Yeah, I think that would have been funny if they picked her up right at the press conference. But yeah, that's just as good. Well, almost as good.
Sure.
But I just pulled the bus up to these when they had these demonstrations.
Oh, absolutely.
Load them up.
Yeah. And then, let me tell you, I don't mind stopping. On the way down to Mexico, I would not be opposed if you want to pull into IHOP or into a Cracker Barrel and buy them a dinner. I'll give a nice dinner as a send off. You know, be nice knowing you. No, time to leave.
Right.
You know. So.
Well, you know, the thing is, what really should happen is, first off, people talk about, okay, they're here illegally and they ought to be deported on that. Well, I guess that's true somewhat. But the thing is, we have on the books, it's federal law. If you enter here illegally, it is a felony offense. It is a crime. So it's not something that you should get a slap on your wrist. I mean, it's something that if you're here illegally, you'll be arrested, you'll be charged, and you're convicted. You're in prison for a year, 6 months, or a year and a half. And then when you're done, then you're deported.
Yeah.
And if you have that, because you and I, we've talked about this, that if they would do that, they wouldn't be crossing the borders again.
No, because, somebody could say, well, look, that'll be terribly expensive. First off, those who'd be really upset about it, saying how expensive, are the very ones who say it's not very many people. So, but you wouldn't have to happen more than a dozen times, and the message would be out.
Right. And it'll be self-exported.
Oh, yeah. You're not like going across there and work for 6 days and come back home. You go there, you're in jail for a year.
Right.
That's it. You're in jail. And there wouldn't be very many people that you have to do that to before they'll understand.
Absolutely.
And because there's got to be consequences. It would be like somebody robbed. If you rob the bank, Brendan, and you walk inside the front door of the bank, and you go to rob the bank, and they catch you, do they just deport you to the back up to the curb? No. They put you in jail.
Yes.
Yeah. But they don't just say, you can't rob. Sorry, you tried to rob the bank, but you didn't get away with it, so back out to the curb, try again tomorrow. And so the idea of just sending people back home is ludicrous.
Well, because then they would just run back across. Now, there's been cases where there's been people that said, oh, yeah, I've been deported 3, 4, 5 times. It's like, okay, no big deal. We'll just run back across, and I may get caught 5 years from now. I could get caught 3 years. Doesn't really matter. I'll just come back across. Yes. But if you're detained, and then you're in prison 4 years or so, and then you're shipped back, they're like, I'm not going to do this again.
Yeah. And then these people come over here, people say, well, they're not criminals. The men come here just to work. First off, they're stealing jobs.
Right. Right.
They just want to help their family. Nicely, they want to help their family, but what about the poor American who wants to help his family, who now his job wage has been depleted?
Right.
Wife has to go to work because of the income. Or what about those come here who they say they really want a better life, but they're over here defrauding our health care system? Get health care and other housing and so forth, other provisions that are provided to them.
Well, you get food stamps, you got health care, you got free insurance, you got housing, free medical care. I mean, so they get all these benefits because they're here illegally. But the fact is, it's still a crime. Are we going to start now saying, well, we're going to decide which crime a person should be charged with or not,
yeah,
just because we feel sorry for them?
Right.
Well, I need money to pay bills, so I'm going to go rob a bank. Well, what? You can't take the money. Well, I need to pay my bills. Oh, okay. Well, okay, go ahead. How much money do you need? $5,000, $10,000? Go ahead and take it. Well, no, it's a crime.
Or if you rob a bank or a theft and you get $250,000, $500,000, $5 million, whatever, and your kids are living in a nicer home and so forth, do they say, well, we don't want to hurt the kids,
right?
You know, so we're going to let you keep the money. You'll go to jail, but you can keep the money.
Right.
You can keep the benefits of your misdeed. And that's what they're telling us. When they come over here and bring their kids over here, and then they say, well, we don't want to punish the kids. Well, you're not punishing the kids.
Right.
You're just deporting them back to home. You're not punishing them.
Exactly.
You know, if they're born here, or if they're a child, I would not advocate putting children in prison.
Right.
You know, so, you know, somebody goes, there, you don't put kids in prison. Well, I'm not advocating that. But parents, because the parents who are adults should be in prison, and then they can connect them with their family and their
family. Absolutely.
Back home. And that's what needs to be done. And I know some of you say, what about it? What about it? There's always going to be a what about.
Exactly.
But for the most part, that is a system that will work. They come over here illegally, and they get detained, they go to jail, and the kids get deported back to a family member back in country of origin.
Well, it's in the biggest cities where you have some, like the sanctuary cities and that, you know, people get to see the help these illegals get. And, you know, from back when I came here, I did everything the legal way, from applying for a visiting visa to obtaining a working visa to obtaining permanent residency to becoming a citizen. And people would say to me sometimes, boy, it must be nice to get the help. And I'm like, well, you got this color skin and it's white, and you do things the legal way, it costs money.
Exactly.
It's not easy. It's quite a process.
Yeah.
It's bothersome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every other month.
So you didn't care. Oh, you're a white man. We're going to make you a citizen.
Right. I mean, I'm not telling you how many times I was electronically fingerprinted by the FBI, through Interpol to run. Well, they have our background.
Yeah.
To obtain my visa at one point, I had to have an HIV test done in South Africa, make sure I was disease-free.
Right.
And, of course, I couldn't have a criminal record or anything like that.
Right.
And, you know, in the time that I was from a visiting status to a permanent resident to a citizen, I had to keep my nose clean.
Sure.
You know, otherwise I wouldn't have made it. And,
right.
Yeah.
Well, of course, they're not doing that extreme vetting
right. That
they did with you. They're not doing that with the immigrants coming in or the so-called refugees coming in. They're not doing that with them at all.
It's impossible because you don't know their names, especially if they come from a country that is not stable, don't have a stable government intact.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost impossible to do real extreme vetting.
But I will say that, you know, even though, you know, we see the demographics changing, we are starting seeing people that are becoming more bold, you know, in our elected offices. People are starting becoming bold on making statements that we've been saying, you know, for 20, 30, 40 years, you know, about immigration specifically. Case in point, we have Tom Cotton, who's a U.S. Senator in Arkansas, and he has proposed a bill in the Senate that would reduce immigration by 40%. that alone is huge. Now, we were at 100%. Yeah. I mean, we need to stop.
But it's still a big chunk.
But to say, have a bill that says we need to stop immigration about 40%, that is huge. And he's getting a lot of support. And so just the fact that you have someone who's going out there and again saying, we need to stop immigration, the reason they're doing that is they're feeling empowered, they're feeling bold, because they see that Trump is basically paving that way to say, hey, we need to stop some of these things. And these are not unique issues. These are not issues that Trump has come up with. These are issues that the racialist cause have been saying for decades. I mean, we were the forefront in the racialist movement. We have been in the forefront saying these same things about immigration. And there's been people back in the 20s and 30s that have been, you know, laying the framework saying we need to stop this immigration hypocrisy and all the stuff that's going to cause the racial changes in the United States. And so they've been laying the framework to allow people to basically where Donald Trump have been saying, hey, we need to stop immigration. We need to stop to have the foreign policies that's ruining America's economy. It needs to be America first. So these statements he's been saying and echoing for the last year or so has been what we've been saying all along.
Yeah, absolutely. And it refreshing to see people that don't become emboldened and courageous. And not just here, but, all over Europe.
Worldwide.
Yeah, all through Europe.
It's like our people are starting to awaken. They're wanting to claim their identity. They want to claim their nationalism. That's why we see, like, the Brexit vote. We see Marie Le Pen.
They're in Russia, too, now.
I know, but,
Brexit, all the nationalists uprising through Europe.
Yeah.
Because of Russia.
Right. So, with the Brexit vote and with Marie Le Pen in France and with Poland and Germany and in Russia, all of this has caused.
I liked Pastor Rob when I was reading the most recent Torah. That flag that Russia came up, the blue flag with the white silhouettes of the family.
Uh-huh. It says a real family.
A real family. Yeah. Yeah, I really like that.
Oh, absolutely.
That's nice. But you know those flags are for sale? Like, can you get one?
I believe you can.
Are they official? You can buy them?
I believe you can.
Like we tell everyone? Google it.
Google it. I think we're going to check see if we can.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't hear things like, these white folks are moving into the neighborhood. Well, there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I hear that. I mean, it's like if you were to have, two or three dogs living in a house with a family.
Yeah.
You can train them, they'll want to think that they're little people and, listen and they'll behave. But you take the same house, the same family, you put 30 dogs in there, John's only going to do what they do, and they're going to be animals. They're going to be uncontrollable. So, you see, once that number by diversity, mannerism and probably safety cannot coexist together.
Right.
I saw a woman, I wish I knew her name. She was on the Tucker Carlson show about 4 or 5 days ago, Wednesday, maybe Thursday, I forget which. And she was, again, I wish I paid more attention, but she was, I think, an American reporter. And she, in her highest flub about Sweden, Trump made a comment about Sweden's immigration is out of control and dangerous for the citizens of Sweden. The Swedish government now is highly offended by that because they said that's not true, blah, blah, blah. And so she decided to go to Sweden and investigate it herself.
Right.
Now, she almost looked Swedish. And I said, well, how does someone look Swedish? I mean, well, because she could look Norway, she could look, Denmark. But she had a very Nordic Viking features. So she might have had family from Sweden. Maybe she came from Sweden originally. I don't know. But that was never said. But she went to Sweden and she said everything that Trump said about Sweden is absolutely the truth. She was over there, but she brought it out even more radical than you normally hear. She said white people are in danger. As a white reporter, she said, I was often frightened because the media doesn't want, or the government doesn't want the media to report on what's happening because they're afraid it hurts their image.
Or tourism.
Tourism. And Carlson says, you mean, and this is really unique. And then she, of course, lambasted multiculturalism several times.
Right.
She said, they think they're going to bring these people from the Middle East, set them within the borders of Sweden, and suddenly, voila, they become Swedish. She
yeah.
said, no. She said, they bring all their attitudes and beliefs and actions and hatred and anger and cause, they bring all with them. They don't, it just doesn't disappear. And then Tucker Carlson means said, you mean the government would rather, this is interesting, you mean the government would rather destroy their country than to be called racist? And she said, absolutely.
Yeah. Is something like impossible where they've gone to the point of taking down the cross of the church and also offend?
Well, some churches do that in this country.
In this country, too.
Yeah, there's some, lots of churches in this country, I shouldn't say lots, but there are churches in this country who remove the crosses because they don't want to be offensive to non-believers. And so I'm sure that's happening over there in Europe as well.
Yeah. It's like I said, you know, going to Walmart yesterday, you know, just looking for a card for a daughter in the female section, and there is a wife-to-wife card, you know.
Yeah.
And then it makes me think that even before this is going viral right now about a little white boy and a little black boy about 4 or 5 years old who the white boy wanted to shave his head so he could have that short kind of peppercorn hair like his black friend.
Yeah.
Because they believed that if they both wore a red t-shirt, the teacher wouldn't know who the difference was because their hair looked the same. And they're trying to say, oh, this is the new America. This is beautiful. And this is a very scary thing, Pastor Rob.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just how
science. Oh, there's an idea that children have to be taught to be racist.
That's what, yeah.
You know, there are two ways you can look at that. Three ways. One is the statement. Children have to be taught to be racist, not racist naturally. If you don't talk about race, they'll make an issue, they grow up not knowing there's a difference of race. And yet Time Magazine in 2009, 2010, I've got a copy upstairs at the library. It says there that children are identifying their racial type at a little 6 months old. I mean, that even sounds unbelievable to me. Mm-hmm. But it's a little 6 months old babies are starting to identify their racial type with other in their observation. All right. And then they said it has to be taught. So what? You have to be taught to Ken was over here the other day. Right. Or the Josiah. And Grandma says, hot. And stuff like that, because she's cooking. He's hot, hot. And I said, you know, that's probably the second word kids learn. First word, they learn mama. And the second word, they probably learn is hot.
Right.
Because but they have to be taught.
Exactly.
Josiah did not know. He had to be taught that's hot.
Right.
You have to be taught not to play in the street. You have to be taught to not to take a eat aspirin like it's candy.
Right.
You have to be taught all kinds of things for survival and for a strong health and moral health and spiritual health. Those things have to be taught. People are born knowing Jesus Christ. They have to be taught about him and taught about his knowledge and his faith and his redemption and his sacrifice of Calvary. They have to be taught these things. So the idea is that they have to be taught. So what?
Yeah.
Well, the thing of value is taught.
You know, so we all know it all stems to making it be a white guilt. You know, because ultimately, if it was reversed, they all say, blacks, they should be able to learn about their culture sing about their great culture and read about their great culture from little babies up, you know. They all be able to read that and learn about that. Or Asians or Mexicans, whatever the race you want to pick, they should be able to do that from birth. But when white people want to do it, then it's automatically it's racism. It's white guilt.
In this very article I'm referring to, Time Magazine, title, is your baby racist? People Google it and type in, is your baby racist? And I'm sure they'll find it. They can find it. It's very ugly, not just obscure somebody on the internet. There's a Time Magazine, the headline article, shows a pretty little baby, and it says, your baby racist, so a legitimate news source. And but in the article, that was really interesting because they said the same thing. While it's a good, I'm paraphrasing, while it's a good thing for non-white children to identify with who they are as not. It is not a good thing for white children to do that. Because white children, it will embolden them and embolden their racial attitudes as they grow older.
Yeah.
And that's what they don't
want. And they said it right in there in the article.
And that's what they don't want. They don't want white people to be proud of who they are.
Right.
Because we all, as we've always said, once white people are proud of who they are, and then that's when they become victorious again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, even goes from, you know, things how, you know, something's done well. You know, everything bad would happen because of the white race, and that anything that good comes about is now from humanity.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they do that. Well, they do that in all kinds of in studies. You know, you'll find great achievements of the black race, you know, maybe, or Black History Month. But when it talks about white people, they never give a racial identity. They only give a national identity. He was a great Swede. He was a great Frenchman. He was a great German. He was a great Englishman. And the other, he was a great black man.
Exactly.
You know? They don't say he's a great white man, you know, and they kind of group all the white people together, but they break them down in nationality. A great German, a great Swede, a great Brit, a great Scotsman, great Russian, whatever, but black people, they're all lumped together to emphasize the white, the blackness, and that black identity.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And the people are being bombarded with that. You know, kids in school every day of the week.
Mm-hmm. Well, the
when we first came here, you had something you showed Jason, a quote or something. What was that quote?
Oh, that was a quote. At this year's Faith and Freedom, I thought I'm talking on South Africa. And really, when you talk about South Africa, you really have to kind of go back to the beginning, because it's just so much has happened. You know, people have to stand stuff from the beginning. And I was talking about the two prime ministers, because we're on the British parliamentary system, now prime ministers. You know, for Voort instituted the apartheid system, people thought that Voort and de Klerk were, in America they say de Klerk, but that the two Voort and de Klerk were, upholding it, but they really weren't. They were selling the country away. And so I came across this thing where it was written by a Roman statesman, philosopher, and...
Let me interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
Both, what was the firm? AP or PA, or both were, had some issues with
that? There's Buck Witzer and there's P.W. Witzer.
P.W. All right. Now, wasn't his grandfather the one that first instituted apartheid?
For Witzer instituted.
Okay, that was his what, grandfather or great-grandfather?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But it was a relative?
I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, sure. Just could be just similar names.
Right.
I see. Okay.
Right. All right. And so I came across this thing where it's just like an enemy in the gate. And this was written by, like I said, a Roman statesman and philosopher, Marcus Tullius. And it says, a nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and appears not a traitor, but he wears the face and the garments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretively and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so it may no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. The traitor is a plague. And as Botha and de Klerk were giving South Africa away to when de Klerk freed Nelson Mandela as being a political prisoner, they were the enemies within the gates.
Right.
And like, you know, it says, you know, they speak a familiar accents and look the same. Well, P.W. Botha and de Klerk were white. You know, you thought they were on our side, enforcing apartheid, making the country strong, and they're giving it away.
Yeah.
And then after apartheid is abolished, and they flee this country.
Yes.
So just because somebody looks like us and talks like us doesn't mean he's one of us.
Correct.
Yeah. It reminded me of this Romans when I think this was before the election. I think it was before the election when they're talking about the Russians trying to hack the process, and Obama's being interviewed. And he's talking to a reporter, and he's talking about the Russians, like, they're over there. But I'm over here, I'm an American, that's how, this is the message he's sending out. I'm an American, the Russians are like the bad guys. And he says, Obama says, it's time for Trump to understand that Russia is trying to interfere with our elections, and that we over here are trying to defend democracy. And they need to understand that we, referring to himself, and with all the Republicans, all the conservatives versus Russia, we're on the same team.
Right.
I thought, well, wait, I'm not Obama's team.
Right. Exactly.
He's not on my team.
Exactly.
Let me get there, one on the same team. Who am I? We're on the same team.
Right.
Just because an American living here, speaking English, went to Harvard, and so-called president of the United States, doesn't mean he's on our team.
Exactly. That's the agenda.
Yeah.
That's what they have to look at.
Yeah.
And the agenda is to destroy the foundation of America and destroy the people of the foundation, what we would call the children of the republic, then he's not our friend.
Right. And so this globalist agenda, really what we're having become more and more obvious is those who are promoting a globalist agenda and those who promote a nationalist agenda. And the globalists want to destroy any nation that will not fall lockstep in with their agenda.
Right.
And that's part of the reason why they hate Putin, because I think Putin was one of the early nationalist uprisings that occurred in Europe.
Right.
And the others are growing. No other country has really claimed a nationalist principle yet, although France may do it with Le Pen and other countries that are on the verge of it. Brexit exerted somewhat of it when they stepped out of the EU, and then Trump's election here on a pro-nationalist point. So globalists are really concerned, I think, about them losing their grip on what's happening.
Yeah. Well, because you look in Europe, I mean, it just, and the reason it's happening so quickly, I think, in Europe is they are being dumped at a faster rate on this multiculturalism through the refugees and immigration that's coming in there. I mean, you look online and you can see the massive riots in France and in Germany from the Muslims.
Yeah.
And that's why these pro-nationalist groups are rising so quickly.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there you've had basically hundreds and thousands of years of a country where people have lived there, their descendants have lived there, and they're being invaded over a 15, 20, 30-year period. I mean, it's at an alarming rate.
Yeah.
And they see this, and then it's just not a little bit where it's kind of unique and kind of cool, but now it's like a mudslide, and they see an alarming rate. And plus, these immigrants, these Muslims that are coming in there, they're bold about it. They're not like just sitting there quiet. They're bold. They're on the streets. They're rioting. They're saying, "We're taking over. We're going to your wives and your we're going to marry your wives and your children are going to be Muslims." And I mean, they're being bold about it.
According to one story, I said that by 2070, Islam will become the world's largest religion.
Right.
Christianity is going to continue to grow too, but this was interesting. Christianity is going to continue to grow about half the rate of Islam. It's going to continue to grow about half the rate, but it's growing in non-white countries.
Right.
In white countries, Christianity is on the decline. And that is because they weaken Christianity. It no longer reflects the ideals of our forefathers.
Exactly.
And so white people in Europe and white people in America, the Christianity that their forefathers embraced has been gutted. And they see nothing in it anymore. And so it's growing because with Christianity is morphing, it's transitioning from the faith of our forefathers into a world's religion. And the world's religion then becomes more acceptable because it's just a different lifestyle.
Right.
It's not a faith of a people.
It's like race mixing. I feel the enemy's message of race mixing has become a message of white mixing because the essential ingredient is a white person, not an Asian, a Negro, an Indian, or any other ethnicity. It's a white. And that's genocide.
Yeah, I a friend of mine told me that he's passed on now. He said a black person taunted him one time, taunted him, because he knew what his beliefs were. He said, "Listen, he said, I can take any," this was a black guy, I said, "I can take any woman in the world, any woman, and I can produce a black baby. He said, you can't do that. He said, you can only produce a white baby if you have a white woman. He said, that's why we're going to win over you white bastards.
Yeah, right.
And there's a lot of truth to that. And white people need to understand they do have some pressures to protect and cherish. And a lot of people do, but they don't understand, they fail to grasp how this is affecting their children. While they may say and have maintained it, they don't understand that this propaganda can affect the future of their children and grandchildren. So they may not raise things, but what about the grandchildren? What will happen there?
Well, and I think that's why they, when we say they, the enemy, the globalists, the multiculturalists, that's why they're so afraid of this white awakening. Sometimes, well, lately they've been calling the world vote. Now, that's why they're so afraid of this, because they see white people starting to think of themselves as a race. Because once our people starts becoming the minority, and we globally we are the minority, but let's say just talk about the United States, you know, specifically with the United States becoming more and more non-white, white people as a result of that are becoming more aware of their whiteness. They're becoming more aware of their culture declining and about to be exterminated. And as a result of that, they're starting to take action. They're starting to be more bold, and the enemy doesn't want that. And so it's a negative that our people are declining as in numbers, but it's positive on the other side because of the fact that now it's forcing our people to realize we are the minority. Our culturally, we are the minority, and we're about to be exterminated. And now we have to think of ourselves as race. And that's what they're afraid of more than anything. Because they know, even though we may be the minority of few, they know most white people generally are very proud of who they are, and they start thinking racially, consciously of white people. They know that's when we become bold, and that's when we start becoming victorious. And that's what they're afraid of.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. We've been here for an hour, and we'll probably bore everybody out of it. We appreciate everybody. I'm just joking. We appreciate everybody listening. Share this on social media. Tell your friends about this broadcast. Tell them about altrighttv.com. Tell them about White Pride Radio. Help spread this message of White Christian Bible. We're going to do so much. We can talk. We can help organize. We work. But the legs on the ground, the people that are out there making this movement move, are people who have a great faith in the future of their children. And I want to do something to help enhance it.
And every person that listens to this is a person of influence in their community. Every person, soccer mom, everyone that's in on the business, wherever they may be, they have influence over their neighbors and their family members.
Right. And don't forget that. We say it every time. I understand that. But just like any ministry that's out there with a message, we depend upon our supporters. The tithe, the weekly tithe, I mean, it's a biblical commandment that you pay your tithe each week, that you pay your tithe. Some people, a lot of people spend more money on video games and video movies than they will support in the movement. And so we need your help. We need your support. Just pray about it. I'm not asking you to do anything rationally, but just stop and pray about it, whether this is a worthy cause. And look at your children. Look at your children. Decide how valuable their future is. And so anyway, we're going to close it up. Remember the Faith and Freedom Conference, April 28, 29, and 30. Mark your calendar and begin making plans. You can give us a call at area code 870-427-3414, and someone will answer the phone. A delightful person will answer the phone and answer your questions for you. Until next time, this is Thomas Robb.
And Jason Robb.
And Brendan Warner.
And we're reminding you to love your God and to love your people.